Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Today marks the 25th anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster, which occurred the afternoon of the abandoned FA Cup semi-final between Liverpool and Nottingham Forest. 94 people lost their lives on April 15th, 1989 as a result of the injuries suffered at the game. That number rose to 95 with the passing of Lee Nicol 4 days later, and eventually to 96 in March of 1993 when Tony Bland died after 4 years of medical care. In excess of 24,000 people were at Anfield today. This as the city paid tribute to those who went to a football match to support their heroes and never came home.
They all just moved forward quick and they wouldn't back up, so there was people at the front getting crushed and basically screaming because they couldn't breathe, and then they were screaming to the stewards and the police to open the gates, and they were just looking and walking past. They just took a bit too long. People were just crushing, and were like, there was a lad and his girlfriend, and they were just screaming. These words were, "Please God help me," and I believe the girl died. Her face was just blue.
I seen people dead there. I was there, and I was against the bar right at the front, and when I was at the bar at the front, there was people, there was a gentleman on my arm, and he said, you're choking me, and he just fell. Yeah. He just literally fell, and that was the last of him.
At first, we didn't realise how bad it was. But the more people that came on, they could see how bad it was. Everybody was crying, people were being ill, it was awful. I was sitting in the ambulance with my friend, and four people were brought outside. They were dead on stretchers. It was just sickening. People were screaming, then starting aggravated with the police because they wanted them to get moving quicker. It was awful.
Innocent people dead. Why? Why didn't the FA give us the big end? Why? Why didn't he give us the big end? We knew they had more supporters. They knew we had more supporters. Why didn't they give us the big ends? Because they knew we had more supporters. Left supporters suffer like that. Why?
Still very difficult to listen to all these years on. Those at Anfield today were addressed by the man who, in a football sense, are the men inspiring renewed hope for fans on both sides of the Stanley Park divide. We'll hear from the Liverpool manager, Brendan Rodgers, in just a moment. But first, the Everton boss, Roberto Martinez.
I was only 15 in April 1989. Football mad kid. Football mad family, like many of you today. And we heard the news. We heard about Hillsborough. And as a family, we couldn't believe the pain and horror that the families would get by receiving the news that the loved ones wouldn't be coming home. Wouldn't be coming home from a football match. How can anyone die watching the game you love? That isn't right. That isn't fair. What happened after wasn't right or fair either. To have to fight for the good name of the ones you lost was appalling. But as my chairman said a year ago, the authorities took on the wrong city if they thought they were going to get away with that.
Just before I make a few brief personal remarks, I just want to say a big thank you to Roberto. A wonderful speech, and no matter what the clubs are doing, it shows that this city is very much together, both in people and in football. So thank you, Roberto. Today is significant because of the 25th anniversary. Occasions like this remind the country and the world of how important it is to remember and honour the people that we lost. Both for us, Liverpool Football Club, and the city of Liverpool, we carry the memory every day, the 96 people, their families, the survivors. You matter to us every day, and that inspires us to play. So thank you for inviting me here. I really do feel inadequate in your company. But to be asked to do a reading at such a significant time in your battle, it's a huge honour, and I'm greatly humbled. And thank you for the inspiration you give to us all, the courage, the dignity, and all the most trying circumstances imaginable. We will always strive to honour you, the families, and the memory of the 96 people we lost. You'll never walk alone.
That's Brendan Rodgers addressing the crowd at Anfield this afternoon. We're joined for a couple of different perspectives on events from 25 years ago by George Hamilton, RTE commentator, who was on duty for RTE television on the afternoon itself. Peter Breen, former head of communications with Leinster Rugby, now the head of fundraising and communications with the DSPCA, who was at Hillsborough as a nine-year-old boy. And John Keith, who is our long-standing contributor on all matters relating to Merseyside, joins us as well. George, to talk firstly, in footballing terms, I watched the video back today. It was one of those, we would describe it as the ideal day for football. And this was an occasion which should have been about two of the greatest teams the English game had to offer going head to head in such an illustrious competition.
Yeah, there were so many things about it on that occasion, that we had Alan Hansen playing his very first game of the season, which was one big thing that struck us. He was in the Liverpool defence after a long period out through injury. We had Brian Clough's Nottingham Forest up against Liverpool. They were one of the top teams at the time. And this was a repeat of the semi-final that had taken place the previous year. As you say, it was an absolutely perfect day. In those days, Hillsborough, Goodison Park, they were the semi-final venues. Hillsborough was a traditional place that you'd look to on the last weekend of the FA Cup before the FA Cup final itself. Very different times then with the FA Cup, when it was a major competition and the final brought down the curtain on the English domestic season. So yes, it was a huge occasion, a huge day, with two of the biggest teams in England at the time, and something that was really looked forward to.
John Keith, to talk about it from a Liverpool perspective in particular, the club in advance had raised serious questions about the suitability of Hillsborough, firstly as a venue, and secondly the suitability of Leppings Lane as the area for the Liverpool fans to be housed in.
Yes, they had indeed, Damien, and by a very bitter and cruel irony, 4 years earlier, Peter Robinson, the chief executive, had raised exactly the same concerns about Heysel and said it was unsuitable for such a game as Liverpool v Juventus. UEFA didn't listen to him. And the FA, in this case, Peter asked for the other end to be allocated to Liverpool fans because there were far more of them than Nottingham Forest fans. And again, his plea went unheard. And what happened, was, of course, was tragic, horrible, and has been like a cloud over Merseyside for a quarter of a century.
We'll talk about that in just a moment. But Peter Breen, from a spectator sense, to take you back to that day, was there a sense beforehand around the streets of Hillsborough, around the streets of Sheffield, that things weren't quite right? It wasn't the same away experience that you would have had at previous games.
There was very heavy traffic, which isn't unusual around a big game. There was heavy restrictions on the M62. We were on a bus. We were heading up to Hillsbury for the semi-final that day, and the plan was to continue on up to Glasgow to see Celtic and Hibs in the Scottish Cup semi-final, which was the following day. But it was pretty apparent, and with the congestion of traffic, with the heat, people getting into the ground, there was certainly a crush at the gates. So we would have, in my group, which would have been my late father John, my brothers Dave and Alan, Con Hoolan, exactly, and Frank McKenna, who was a legend in his own right from Atlas Travel, for people from a particular vintage would have remembered Frank, but he ran a number of trips, and but certainly getting into the ground, there was an almighty crush. We were very close to Leppings Lane End. We were at the north stand, which, looking out from where we were sitting to the right, was the Leppings Lane end. And so it was quite hairy at that time, and we would have got into our seats in around 5 to 3. So it was pretty clear that there was something awry. Mm. And as it turned out, unfortunately, it was proven so. But yeah, it was there was certainly in the air, something in the air.
George, from a broadcaster's perspective, how evident, or how soon did it become evident to you that there was something not right, and that this just wasn't incidents of crowd trouble that you know British football had been marred with on so many occasions in previous years?
Well, it was obvious from the start that it wasn't a pitch invasion. It was obvious that there was a problem on that end, that Leppings Lane end, that it was overcrowded. And I'm pretty sure in my mind that I made reference to that fact on the day, that it wasn't, you know, potentially a riot or anything like it. There was no question of it being anything other than overcrowding, because I think the line I might have used was that everybody wanted to see this game and they all wanted to get in, but Hillsborough's capacity maybe wasn't enough to deal with it. But certainly once somebody ran onto the pitch, you know, we've seen in pitch invasions or fans coming onto the pitch, and there's a certain amount of running around that they do, and they try to avoid the stewards and so on. But the first guy who came onto the pitch, he didn't want to run around. He ran up to a player to say there's trouble. They were trying to get a message across to get the game stopped, and fair play to Ray Lewis, the referee. He got the players off the pitch quickly. He was the one who seemed to realise how bad it all was. While the officialdom didn't seem to get it until it had got really bad.
And George, there was a programme on BBC Five Live last night where they spoke to an awful lot of people that were present on the day, and stories recounted time and time again, firstly of the police seeming to be unable to control it, unaware of the extent of what was going on, but also the lack of preparation or the lack of planning on behalf of those running the event. No access for ambulances, not a defibrillator on site. And simply things that in 2014 is unimaginable at a massive sporting event such as this.
Absolutely. And the thing that sticks in my mind, apart from the awful, ghastly images of what we saw on that day when the tragedy unfolded, was the actual fact that an ambulance was driving across the pitch. You know, why did the ambulance have to drive across the pitch? Why were there not access for the ambulances outside that they could get the people out to the ambulance? Why did the ambulance have to come right into the pitch? This was an image that stuck with me. An ambulance with its siren going, coming across a football pitch. It tells you in that one image is encapsulated the unpreparedness of the authorities on the day for what went wrong.
John Keith, you weren't actually present. You were at the other semi-final, which Everton and Norwich were in action at Villa Park. How quickly did the word spread that things were not right at Hillsborough?
Well, it was a very, very strange and eerie day. One of my colleagues, Chris James of the Daily Mirror, his son was at Hillsborough and was in the Leppings Lane end. Chris knew where he was, but of course, these were the days pre-mobile phones. We were getting stories coming through to us from our radio colleagues, but the players of both sides knew nothing of this at all. You can imagine Chris's feelings for his son. He eventually managed via radio people to establish his son had got out. But it was terribly, terribly sad. Everton won 1-0 through Pat Nevin's goal. And as they got into the dressing room, Colin Harvey, who was the manager, had just been told of what had happened. They all came in bouncing with joy. They'd reached Wembley and he said, "Just sit down, everybody. There's no celebration. There are people dead at Hillsborough." Mm. And it was awful. It really was. And goodness knows what it must have been like at Hillsborough, because it was bad enough at Villa Park.
And Peter, from a supporter's perspective, I'm sure while it's distressing for everyone involved, from a broadcaster's perspective, I think you know your adrenaline, professionalism in situations like this might kick in. But from a spectator's point of view, can you remember what the atmosphere was like, what it was like having to watch on and witness this at close quarters?
Yeah, it was scary, and there was no other word for it. I remember looking behind. I think it's always upsetting for a child to see an adult or a parent cry, but there was an adult who I never knew who was a couple of rows back in the stand who was in tears. That was probably in around the 3:30 mark. At around 4:00, I think Kenny Dalglish must have come on the PA system and pleaded for calm. It was met with some applause, but again, there was so much going on and so much panic that no one really knew what was going on. So by the time we were leaving the stadium, my father, I suppose I should mention as a footnote, was at the Heysel disaster. He was also at the Ibrox disaster in 1971, where 66 people died, which is quite unusual, I think. But he was shouting straight away to policemen. He knew that there was problems coming in. It was pretty apparent at that point. And it was interesting, something that John said about communications down the road. This is the age before the internet, before mobile phones and text messages. And obviously, Dad's first concern was to try and get a message home to our mother that we were fine. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, back in 1971, he was actually unaccounted for at one point until 8 o'clock the following morning when he walked in the door and said, "How are you, Mac? Can I have your breakfast?" So his first concern was obviously knowing that my mum would be concerned.
And there are stories recounted of, again, the BBC documentary last night talked of one phone box where there were in excess of 500 people queuing to try and use it, and literally just people opening their doors around Hillsborough in order to let people in to use their facilities and use the phones, because you know, that presumably was everyone's first concern, you know, to notify loved ones that they were safe.
Well, exactly. And so my father, Con, Frank, his daughter, Suzanne, and my two brothers, Dave and Alan, would have been walking down the road to find our coach, because I said we were going up to Glasgow. As you said, the phone boxes were full. So Dad started knocking on doors. Again, there were queues and that going into the houses, but he knocked on one door. He told his brothers to mind me, or his sons to mind their youngest, i.e. me, and knocked on a door, and it turned out a lovely middle-aged lady in a negligee, who turns out it was a brothel she was running, managed to give him permission to use her phone to ring home. So it was kind of unusual, yeah, of course. I didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah, it's a unique insight. Let's hear from one of the players who was involved on the day, and indeed probably the player that was closest to events at that end of the ground, Bruce Grobbelaar.
I can remember it as if it was yesterday. Beautiful sunshine day, you know, we went out there and looked at the pitch and went out to see which area we were in. Go back into the dressing room, get yourself ready. So we went out. So they kick off, we hit the crossbar, and you know, the crowd goes wild, and then there's a surge behind, and I could hear it. I turn around, and again, you know, you think nothing of it. I concentrated on the game. The referee turned around and looked, and that's when he called the game off. And from there, it was just a somber mood, you know. Got onto the bus, and for 2.5 hours, or 2 hours back home, we just listened to the radio, and the radio was coming up every 10, 15 minutes, 20 deaths, 25 deaths. And then when it got to about 30, we switched off the radio. We didn't want to hear anymore. And we got to Anfield. I'm not too sure when the call was, but Kenny and Marina and the management, they called us and said the best thing for us to do is go with the families for counselling. And for us to counsel ourselves and to counsel the bereaved families. And that was probably the best thing for the soccer players and the families. Because I remember for myself going to a family in Birkenhead, knocking on the door, and then told that I had killed their son. And they closed the door. Because you can understand that their son went to watch me or watch us play. And you stand there and you knock on the door again. And they said, no, go away, and you get sworn at and everything. When you don't, you knock on the door again. You say, you know, you start talking. And then you realize that they hold you responsible, but not solely. I can see the exact same images today. You will never forget. There's so many other things that that happened in that day that, you know, haven't been solved. It's 25 years is a long time.
That's the voice of Bruce Grobbelaar. John Keith, if we pick up on that, the role the players played in, you know, supporting and being there for the families, but maybe more so the role that Kenny Dalglish played. And he it's not stretching it, is the man that effectively galvanised that club, galvanised that city, and went beyond any realms imaginable of the job of a manager.
Without a doubt. Well, there were two people. The first big decision, very early the following morning, when Anfield was like a funeral ground with people from all clubs, from all over the country, draping scarves and banners around the railings at Anfield. And it was quite incredible. And Peter Robinson took the decision to open the gates, and he let people come onto the pitch. And it was like that for 2 weeks afterwards. And in fact, it was the moment that turned Anfield into a garden of remembrance. It was quite unbelievable. And then Kenny and Marina Dalglish, you can't speak highly enough of what they did. I mean, I was in that ground every day for a fortnight from about 9 in the morning to 10 at night. And the awful, harrowing memories of grieving families, tearful, sometimes screaming in grief coming in those doors. And Kenny and Marina, who had no experience of counselling themselves, they were actually counselling these families, along with other players, I have to say. But Kenny and Marina were unbelievable in what they did. And no football manager has ever, I don't think, ever done what Kenny Dalglish did in those weeks and years after Hillsborough. And he's still doing it today. You saw the reaction to him. For those who were at or saw TV pictures of today's memorial service, you see the feeling of the of the people of Merseyside towards Kenny. It's just unbelievable.
And George Hamilton, just as we near conclusion, looking back at some of what was written in the aftermath, and people had to read about their deceased relatives, loved ones being called thugs, being called villains, being told they were hooligans. Think of someone like Anne Williams, whose son died, Kevin, 15, Margaret Aspinall, Trevor Hicks, who fought for 25 years to discover what they, or to see in public what they know to have been the truth. What strength it must take.
Absolutely, because anyone who witnessed what happened at Hillsborough cannot have failed to realise that this was not something that was instigated from the terraces, that this was something greater that had been caused to the people who were on the terraces. It wasn't anything to do with those who were on the terraces. It was a matter of a lack of crowd control. It was badly run, badly organised. It should never have happened. The whole thing was completely disorganised, and that people suffered was just unforgivable. And it has taken a very, very long time, but it is admirable that that this has been got to the bottom of, and it has been shown up for what actually happened, that innocents lost their lives on a very black day for sport.
Peter, just to finish, is it something that ever leaves you?
No, I don't think death is a terrible thing, I think, to go through, having gone through it personally myself. Everyone has been touched by it at some point, but I don't think you ever want to forget. You don't want to ever forget the moments that shape you. I imagine for the fans who are there, for the people who are affected, for the players, listen to Bruce Grobbelaar, listen to Kenny Dalglish, listen to John Aldridge and others speak. I think that you want to learn lessons. You want to. I think the one thing about death is you deserve, everyone deserves closure. People have not had closure. The City of Liverpool, the fans, the families, the players. You look at something like Stevie Gerrard and the emotion there with the personal connection to his family and Jean-Paul Gattuso. And I just hope they have that closure. And hopefully if it's a league title, maybe that'll help. But I think it'll probably, some wounds will probably never heal.
Well, to you and John Keith likewise, and George Hamilton, thank you very much for what must be a difficult process to relive those days in 1989. Thank you to you all.
Thank you.
George Hamilton in our Belfast studio, John Keith and Peter Breen, who's joined us here in studio. We're going to finish with no more than George would RTÉ Television. Obviously, the BBC were on air on that afternoon as well. And here's how their radio programme finished that afternoon. Here's the legendary BBC commentator, Peter Jones.
I think the biggest irony is that the sun is shining now and Hillsborough's quiet, and over there to the left, the green Yorkshire hills. And who would have known that 74 people would die here in the stadium this afternoon? I don't necessarily want to reflect on Heysel, but I was there that night broadcasting with Emlyn Hughes, and he was sitting behind me this afternoon. And after half an hour of watching stretchers going out and oxygen cylinders being brought in and ambulance sirens screaming, he touched me on the shoulder and he said, "I can't take any more." And Emlyn Hughes left. And two other items I just think of sitting here now in the sunshine. Two items. One that still reminds me of Heysel. The gymnasium here at Hillsborough is being used as a mortuary for the dead. And at this moment, stewards, just as they did at the Heysel Stadium, have got cartons and little paper bags, and they're gathering up the personal belongings of the spectators, some of whom died, some of whom are now seriously injured in nearby hospitals. And the red and white scarves of Liverpool, and red and white bobble hats of Liverpool, and red and white rosettes of Liverpool, and nothing else out there on the enclosure where all the deaths occurred. And the sun shines now.